It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome back into another week of Mid Madness right here on 95.3 WBCK. I am Dejon Hughes. I'm still flying solo. We've not gotten this thing sold yet, but I am looking for help. So hopefully I won't be doing this thing solo, Mike, for too long. Nonetheless, we got plenty to talk about this week. We're going to start with the Tigers as we have been every single week. And I mean, it's exciting when they're playing well. There's no reason not to talk about them. We're going to dive into the UFL championship, give a recap of what happened with the Michigan Panthers, and sadly, talk about why they're not celebrating and maybe ways that they could be doing so next year. We're going to touch on WNBA because, man, have things been crazy heated over there. And then we'll get in on the NBA finals as well before wrapping things up in that last segment, that third segment, with the NBA draft and what the Pistons can do, who they should be looking at, etc., as that approaches. And of course, I'll get into my picks at the end of the show. But as always, even though Jacob ain't here, I'm still letting y'all know what's popping. This past weekend, it was fun. Went out to Philly, had a great time, enjoyed some professional lacrosse, did a live podcast for some work that I do outside of here. But the travel home, I did miss my flight because TSA was insane Sunday morning. I was supposed to be leaving at 6 a.m., making it back here to Kalamazoo at 11 a.m. Well, I didn't leave at 6, and I didn't make it back home until 2:30 a.m., so I had quite the travel weekend, but that's now past and behind me. I had a much better week this week here at work. Things were great. Had a good time. Did some good things in coaching. And now I'm going into this weekend where I feel even more excited getting back out on the sidelines as a coach this weekend. Got another tournament coming up. And my favorite professional lacrosse team is on a bye week this week. So I have no stress watching the games this weekend. It's going to be warm, too. The first day of summer was yesterday, the day I was recording all of this. And I mean, hey, what better way to celebrate than to have some good weather? So you know what time it is to get into the rest of this show. Let's talk about the Detroit Tigers. The Detroit Tigers are one of the best teams in baseball. But before we do so, we're going to stretch into the standings in the entire MLB. Before going anywhere else, we'll start with the Detroit Tigers in the AL Central. They're at the top with a 48-28 record. Those Cleveland Guardians, 37-36, just 9.5 games back. And the Minnesota Twins are 10 games back at 37-37. The AL East, the Yankees are 43-31. The Tampa Bay Rays, 41-34. The Toronto Blue Jays, 40-34. Tampa Bay Rays are 2.5 games back from the Yankees, while the Blue Jays are 3 games back from the Yankees. The top of the AL West, the Houston Astros at 43-32. The Seattle Mariners, 37-36, 5 games back, while the Los Angeles Angels are 6.5 games back and are 36-38 on the year. Moving over to the NL, starting in the West, the Los Angeles Dodgers are 46-30. Meanwhile, the San Francisco Giants, 42-33, are 3.5 games back, and 5 games back are the San Diego Padres at 40-34. In the NL East, the New York Mets are 45-30. They're tied atop the NL East with the Philadelphia Phillies, who are also 45-30. 10 games back from the both of them are the Atlanta Braves at 34-39. In the NL Central, those Chicago Cubs coming in at 45-29, the top of the Central Division over there. Behind them, 5.5 games back, are both the Brewers and the Cardinals at 40-35. When looking at those respective leagues overall, you know who's sitting at the top of the American League. It's our Detroit Tigers, holding a 4-game lead on the Yankees, a 4 and a half game lead on the Astros, a 6.5 game lead on the Rays, and a 7-game lead on the Blue Jays, who are fifth in the AL. The Cubs sitting atop the NL, they're tied with the Dodgers, who are also at the top of the AL. Half game back from the both of them are the Mets and the Phillies, and then coming in at fifth, 3.5 games back from those two at the top are the San Francisco Giants. Looking at the MLB overall, the Detroit Tigers have reclaimed their crown at the top of the league from the Chicago Cubs at 48-28. They are 2 games above the Cubs and the Dodgers, 2.5 games above the Mets and Phillies as they round out the top 5. Looking at the wild card, which has nothing to do with the Detroit Tigers this year, which is amazing to see. In the AL, the Tampa Bay Rays and the Blue Jays are currently holding those spots, and the Red Sox are in on that mix as well. Just a half game back from the Red Sox are the Mariners and the Guardians. Meanwhile, in the NL, the Phillies and Giants are leading the way. The Padres still in that mix, and a half game back from the Padres are the Brewers and Cardinals. Now, let's talk about the best team in baseball. Yeah, I said it again. The Detroit Tigers are the best team in baseball. The last time we talked, they had just gotten through a 3-game series with the Orioles in which they won 2-1. That was just after beating the Cubs in a 3-game series 2-1. Then they went on to play the Reds, and well, Ellie De La Cruz gave us some problems, and he really took care of the Tigers in a way that, you know, star players are supposed to lead their team to victories. The, you know, Tigers jumped out and got things, you know, looking to be in their way and having that momentum in game one, 11-5, a victory for the Tigers. And then the Reds came bouncing back the very next day, 11-1 win for them. And then they carried that momentum into the third and final game of the series to win that one 8-4 and take the series 2-1. That was the first time the Tigers had lost a series since, wow, I actually have to go to their full schedule to tell you. So give me just a moment. They hadn't lost a series since the Cleveland Guardians that they lost back on May 22nd. So it had been almost a month since the Tigers had lost a series. They're playing phenomenal baseball. There's a reason they're sitting at not only the top of the AL Central, not only the top of the American League, but the entire Major League Baseball. There's a reason they're at the top, and they're proving it week in and week out. Looking at their schedule coming up for the next week, they're going to be playing the Tampa Bay Rays in a 3-game series coming up over this weekend. Obviously, that started Friday night, 7:05 first pitch as Flaherty took on Boz. And then later today, literally in, I don't know, an hour, 12:10 first pitch, Gibson Long will be taking on Peapot on the MLB Network. And then a 12:10 first pitch again tomorrow, Casey Mize taking on Littell, as the Tigers will look to get back in the winning ways. Not that they've won, lost a lot of games, but just, you know, winning another series and continuing to push themselves as they were the first to 40. And this weekend gives them the opportunity to be the first to 50. And then they'll have an opportunity to be first to 60 as they'll play the A's in the middle of the week. They have Skubal stepping on the mound on Tuesday against Severino. Wednesday, the Tigers are undecided, but Lopez will be on the mound for the A's. And then we have Flaherty stepping on the mound on Thursday against Springs. Tuesday is a 6-4. Tuesday and Wednesday are both 6:40 first pitches, while Thursday is once again another 1:10 afternoon first pitch. And then the following weekend, we got another AL Central battle. So we'll be taking on the Twins in a 3-game series Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You got Gibson, Long, Mize, and Skubal. And that Sunday night matchup on June 29th, it's on Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN. The Tigers playing on primetime has been fantastic. It's been exciting to see our favorite team playing in that blockbuster spot because they're the best team in baseball. We just hope that that success continues. Looking at, obviously, we're going to check in on our team leaders. Batting average right now, Gleyber Torres hitting a .281, his OBP at .380, his slugging percentage .425. I mean, leading the Jacks, though, Spencer Torkelson with 16 homers. He's got a .227 batting average and 48 RBIs. But Riley Green is the one that's making sure the batters are crossing the plate. He's got 55 RBIs. He's got 15 homers right behind Torkelson. He's got 280 on his batting average. Pitching, I mean, do we really got to talk about it? We know who is the ace. We know who's doing his job. We know who's leading his team over and over. And we know who's going to be back in the conversation for not only the pitcher's triple crown, but for the AL Cy Young once again. It's Tarik Skubal. 2.06 ERA. He's got 8 wins on the year, and he's got 117 strikeouts. When you have a pitcher like that on the mound for you, it's almost impossible to lose games. He's pitching unreal. Like, it's to a point to where the guys cannot hit on Tarik Skubal, which means as long as you put 2, 3, 4 runs on the board, you're going to win a game that he's pitching. And he's doing so at an amazing pace, even with the loss a couple weeks ago of Job. Gibson Long has filled in that spot, and I think that this team will continue to have success through the rest of this week. Not going to talk too much about the Orioles series, as that's going to be coming up in our picks later on today. But we do have, like I said, Flaherty and Boz taking each other on. That was last night. And then Gibson Long and Peapot will battle on Saturday, later today. And then you have Skubal on the mound again tomorrow. So I'm really excited for more success from the Tigers, and I hope you are as well. We're going to get ready to talk about the WNBA, the UFL, and the NBA Finals when we come back from the break with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. The WNBA has been insane since the start of the season. I mean, you got rookies coming in like Paige Bueckers, making things happen all over the court and pushing the Dallas Wings back to success. And I mean, when you have a generational player, those kind of things happen. You have Angel Reese finally developing her game and starting to become a playmaker, pushing the ball in transition, finishing layups at the basket. She had her first career triple-double over the last week. Obviously, Caitlin Clark has come back from her injury and has been Caitlin Clark. She's been successful from outside the arc. She's made great plays. She's pumped up the crowd. She has been who CC has always been. But at the same time, everybody ain't putting up with CC anymore. We've seen a lot of people take shots at her, and that's exactly what happened over the weekend when they had an intense battle with, let me go to the scores tab here. They played a game the other weekend, or the other day. I believe it was Tuesday night when they played the Connecticut Sun. Things got out of hand in this game. Caitlin Clark took a rough foul. Bodies were bouncing back and forth, and she had teammates that were there to protect her. I mean, Marina Mabry was looked like, hey, she want to play in the big leagues. She going to find out what it's like to play in the big leagues. We not holding back for anybody. You come at us, we're coming at you. But in the exact same token, Caitlin Clark got huge help from her team as well when it came to those situations. I mean, Tina Charnels was doing everything she could to keep things separated. But Sophie Cunningham was all about that action. She didn't care about none of that. She came in moving people out the way. Luckily, she was on the bench when the whole thing happened with Caitlin Clark. But once she got back out on the court, she said, oh, you got a problem? Miss JC Shields, you got a problem with CC over here? Bet. So then JC Shields went up for a layup. And the next thing we know, Sophie Cunningham grabbed her and took her down to the ground, and all hell broke loose. We had players from both sides. We had people leaving the benches, just ensuing in a mob while they're trying to break apart Sophie Cunningham and JC Sheldon, which this game ended up being in favor of the Fever, 88-71. The Connecticut Sun are just 2-9 on the year and are really, really struggling. You saw some of that struggle come out during the game when they got beef with Caitlin Clark. But really, the WNBA has been exciting. The Golden State Valkyries have won some games in their first year as a program. The New York Liberty have only lost two games on the year. The Storm and the Aces aren't quite the teams that they've been of the past few years. Seems to be a slight turning of the tide coming from the WNBA, and it has a mix of young talent coming in and not rolling over to the veterans, and a mix of veterans who are proving that they still deserve to be around. It's just going to be a matter of which teams are able to put it all together. And I know nobody wants to hear this, but if you remember, the Aces had a tough start to the year last year and found themselves right in the mix at the end of the year. So let's not count out the Aces. Let's not count out the Storm or some of these other teams that haven't quite been who they've been in the past. The Minnesota Lynx are another great example. But, I mean, they got Nafisa Collier over there absolutely balling. So if you haven't been watching some WNBA this year, find a way to sit in front of a TV, turn the dub on, and tell me that it's the W is one of the best leagues in the country. Take a second to watch it and tell me you don't enjoy it. But we're going to keep talking about some basketball, just not the women's game. We're going to slide on over to the NBA Finals. This is going to Game 7. This is the first Game 7 since 2016, which was the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Golden State Warriors. This is LeBron's championship that he brought to Cleveland. Now it is the Indiana Pacers' turn to take on the Oklahoma City Thunder in a Game 7. This one's going to be going down on tomorrow night, 8 p.m. The Indiana Pacers are on the road against the Oklahoma City Thunder. ESPN is giving the Thunder a 59.3% chance to win, while 40.7% for the Pacers to steal Game 7 in the Paycom Center and celebrate an NBA championship on the floor of the Thunder while holding the Larry O'Brien Trophy. This is going to be an interesting matchup when you look at how the playoff series as a whole has gone. The NBA Finals has been exciting. I've been excited to say that this year's NBA Finals restored some of that love for the NBA for me, because it has been a good series from Game 1. The Pacers escaped with a Game 1 victory on the road in the Paycom Center, 111-110. Game 2, the Thunder took full control, almost a 20-point victory, 123-107. Then the Pacers were like, hold on now, we're back in our house. Let us get a little Dubski under our belt, as they won 116-107. As you can see, the games definitely got closer over this time period. The Thunder bounced back in Game 4. They steal one from the Pacers, 111-104 in their home court. And now we're back in OKC for Game 5. The Thunder take control in that one, winning by 11, 109-120. The Pacers having to hang on at home. They play with a banged up Tyrese Halliburton, but he goes out and does his thing, helps Pascal Siakam, Obi Toppin, and the rest of this Pacers squad get a 108-91 victory over the Thunder to set up a Game 7 date for tomorrow night. And this is what it all comes down to. It's one game for the culmination of the entire season. Every regular season game that all 30 teams played, every regular season game, all 82 of them, and then every playoff game that all of those teams made it, that they were able to make it into the NBA playoffs, comes down to this one moment. The only game that matters is this one. All of those other games happened because they had to in order to get to this one, but it's all for this one. Game 7, no matter what happens, somebody is going home a champion. Game 7, no matter what happens, someone is going home upset. Game 7, it's going to be electric. Game 7, it's the only game that matters in the entire season. Game 7 might be the most beautiful words in all of sports. And we're getting to experience Game 7 for the NBA Finals tomorrow night. I just don't know who I want to win. To be honest, I don't want to see the Thunder win, because, I mean, their season was weird this year. I don't know if they were really that good. They got a lot of help and things were weird. But I do like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I do want to see him lift the championship at one day. But on contrary to that, I do like Tyrese Haliburton. I do think Pascal Siakam's a good player. I do think Obi Toppin is electric and exciting. And I haven't even gotten over to Aaron Smith or Nembhard, right? Benedict Mathurin. Pacers are a fun team to watch. But as a Detroit Pistons fan, am I ever allowed to cheer for the Indiana Pacers? I don't know. I feel like that's wrong on so many levels. I mean, we can go back to the time where Reggie Miller was there and they were beating us. We can go back to the time where we were battling with them in the playoffs and back in the old Central Division where we had to play them multiple times and there was nothing but beef. And I mean, do I have to say the elephant in the room? The malice in the palace, people. Are we really going to cheer for a team that we don't like because we had to fight them? And we're not just talking Piston players and coaches fighting Pacers players and coaches. We're talking Pistons fans fighting Pacers players and coaches. Pistons fans fighting Pacers fans. Pacers fans fighting Pistons players and coaches. It was literal insanity inside of the palace. And we're supposed to cheer for this team and want them to win a championship? Miss me with that. I'm never doing it. I don't think I want either one of these teams to win. I just hope they both go out and have fun, and I wish they could both lose. But honestly, if I could say one thing to you, since I'm going to pick this game later on in the show, this will be an exciting Game 7 and will be one to remember for quite a while. Now, the sad news of the week, the UFL Championship was Sunday. UFL Championship was Saturday. The DC Defenders, 6-4 on the year, we're taking on your Michigan Panthers, who are also 6-4 on the year. The Panthers had a better defense throughout the season. The Panthers had a better offense throughout the season. They both were coming off one-game win streaks over teams that had defeated them previously in the season. What else could you have asked for? What better road could you have asked for? What better chances could the Michigan Panthers have had if they wanted to win a UFL championship? It was for the first time. No one but the Birmingham Stallions have raised a UFL championship until Saturday. There were two teams that were going to get the opportunity for the first time. Michigan Panthers were one of them. And sadly, they were not able to bring that trophy home. They actually have given up the most points in a UFL championship game ever as the DC Defenders poured in 58 points on Saturday night to take home the UFL championship. I mean, the Panthers weren't far behind. I mean, 34 is okay. Losing by 24 ain't terrible, but it ain't good either. I think the best thing that you can look at here for the Panthers is that they were right where they wanted to be. They made it to the playoffs again. They made it to the UFL championship for the first time. They put up points. They just weren't successful this time around. What does that mean? Get back in the lab. Get into the free agency pools. Look at who didn't get drafted. Look at guys that got cut from the NFL. Start crafting now because you're only one, two, three pieces away from raising the trophy you want to raise. Sure, you lost by 24, but look at where you were. A 6-4 season, making it to the UFL championship only means, hey, we're a couple wins away from being champions. We're a couple wins away from creating a dynasty. We're a couple wins away from being a football team that people are excited to come and watch. The Michigan Panthers have the pieces for success, but there's only going to be one way to find out if they do it, since they couldn't do it this year. We're going to get ready to talk about the NBA draft and what the Detroit Pistons should be looking for and how they can make some great moves. That's coming up after the break. We have more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. The NBA draft is right around the corner. It's actually next week, the 25th and 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ABC and ESPN. And there are tons of teams looking for that next important piece that is going to help them hopefully get to the NBA Finals and win it. But we got to talk about the Pistons and how that could be them. They won't be getting their highest draft pick in the first round, as that is owned by the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're expected to take Thomas Sorbor, a center out of Georgetown, who is just a freshman. He is 6'9", 262 pounds, a 9'1 standing reach, and a 7'6 wingspan. They're hoping that he can help down in the post, get them some extra rebounding and defense, and is more of a depth piece on their bench, as though they may be seeing the likes of Naz Reid and Julius Randle leaving in free agency. Moving on down the list, looking for awesome. The Detroit Pistons do not pick until the second round at pick 37, which we get from the Toronto Raptors. They're expected to take Alex Tuohy, a small forward slash power forward from Sydney, Australia. Checking to ensure that that is not... That's the only pick of this draft for the Detroit Pistons, as they trade away their first round pick. So it looks like they're just going with a depth piece, and they're going to look to attack free agency and see what they can find there. But I mean, realistically, if we want to truly talk about the Detroit Pistons quickly before we dive into the rest of the NBA draft, they don't need much. They were right there. They have all the pieces. They're depth. They're young. And they just got to remain healthy. And they have to continue to gain that confidence in themselves. They're all still on the younger side of the NBA. There's no reason for them to feel rushed. There's no reason for them to feel like they have to get it done in the next year. There's also no reason for them to feel like they don't have the pieces inside of their locker room already, because they do. They just went from almost the bare bones bottom of the league to the sixth seed in just a year. One summer's worth of work, one offseason's worth of work, and a few good draft picks got them into the sixth seed. So imagine what this team's able to do with a full offseason with each other. And then they're adding more pieces to this. Imagine what this team is able to do as they get that confidence and they get another, you know, top six seed in the Eastern Conference again this year. What does that mean for the following year? The Pistons are in a great spot, have all the building blocks to continue to have success. Now let's look at the rest of this NBA draft and what could happen. Projected for the first round pick, the Dallas Mavericks are expected to take Cooper Flagg, the forward out of Duke, 6'7", 221 pounds, 8 foot, 10 and a half inch standing reach, 7 foot wingspan. We know exactly what Cooper Flagg can do. He's been the unanimous number one pick for years now, not even just during this season. So we'll see if Cooper Flagg is actually taken by the Dallas Mavericks or not. The San Antonio Spurs with the number two pick are expected to take 6'4 guard out of Rutgers, Dylan Harper, who's 213, 8'6 standing reach, 6 foot 10 wingspan. This guy can score at every level, a great defender, but also handles the rock and can maintain the floor as the best of anyone. A true floor general point guard that can also score the ball at all three levels. I mean, at 6'4", big guard, you know exactly what's happening here. I like this pick a lot for the San Antonio Spurs, as he gets to fit in with a backcourt that has De'Aaron Fox, Stephen Castle, and of course, Chris Paul, as long as he stays. The Philadelphia 76ers are expected to take shooting guard VJ Edgecombe out of Baylor with the number three pick. The 6'4", 193-foot wing is expected to bring athleticism to the team while also fitting in with the prolific three-point shooters they have in Tyrese Maxey, Jarrett McCain, Quentin Grimes, and of course, Paul George. Con Knipple out of Duke. The wing is 6'5", 219 pounds, expected to be the four seed going to Charlotte to be a stretch player on that wing that's going to provide some 3-and-D type plays for them. The Utah Jazz are looking to take shooting guard Trey Johnson out of Texas. The 6'4", 190-pound guard has a major decision ahead to navigate their way out of what has become a protracted rebuild. So they're hoping that Johnson can come in and help the Jazz with their rebuild. where Jeremiah Fields, Knepel, if available, are to receive long looks as well instead of Trey Johnson. Ace Bailey, forward out of Rutgers, 6'7", 202 pounds, expected to be the sixth seed to the Washington Wizards. And we know that they need a whole lot of help over there. So it'll be exciting to see Ace Bailey in a place where he can come in and sort of be the man right away. He has a professional game and has always had a professional game from the offense to the defensive end. The guy can make plays all over the floor. Really excited to see what Ace Bailey has in the NBA. The New Orleans Pelicans are expected to take point guard Jeremiah Fears out of Oklahoma. The 6'2", 179-pound guard is going at 7. He's built significant momentum with the way he finished the season at Oklahoma, and has front offices thinking hard about his long-term upside, even though he has rough edges to his game. The Brooklyn Nets coming in at 8, expecting to grab a center in Kaman Maluk out of Duke. The 7-foot, 252-pound center expected to come in and be a force on the inside for the Brooklyn Nets that are trying to find every way to get back toward the top of the East. Noah Nsunge, the Toronto Raptors, are expected to take the power forward out of Germany for the 9th pick. The Houston Rockets, getting their pick via the Phoenix Suns, are expected to take Carter Bryant out of Arizona, the forward, 6'6", 214 pounds, received strong reviews throughout the pre-draft process, as he appears likely to be called somewhere between the 9 to 15 range, as he has front court shooting, defensive versatility, and passing powers that make him desirable. Kasperis Jakančiūnas, point guard from Illinois, 6'4", 205 pounds, is expected to join that backcourt in the Portland Trail Blazers at 11, with Donovan Klingon at center. Players such as Jakančiūnas, Bryant, and Nsung could all be available here and bring broadly different skill sets. Obviously, he'll be in the backcourt with Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, and Anfernee Simons. Derek Queen out of Maryland, the center, 6'9", 247 pounds, expected to go to the Bulls, who will be right along the Nikola Vucevic, who's 35. He's a trade candidate, but he's also in his final year of contract. So having Queen, Joan Berger, and Thomas Sorber are all those expected to be looked at by the Bulls, depending on who is available. Igor Demin, a guard out of BYU, 6'9", 199 pounds, expected to go to the Hawks. They get that pick via the Sacramento Kings, pairing him, obviously, with that backcourt of Trey Young. And the Spurs, again, getting a pick from Atlanta, expected to take Joan Berger out of Adriatic. 6'11", 235 pounds center, will likely explore various options with this pick. It would be interesting to see them go and get another center while they already have Victor Wembanyama. But, I mean, to have a two-star tandem like that down low could really make some differences. I'm interested to see how the NBA draft plays out next week. As Pistons fans, we don't have ton to look forward to or talk about, but we do get to make fun of everybody else for making terrible picks. And we don't have to relive, you know, 2003 where we picked a Darko Milicic with the second pick when, you know, Dwayne Wade was available. Carmelo Anthony was available. I mean, obviously LeBron James wasn't. Chris Bosh, but the list goes on, and we picked Darko Milicic. Please tell me how that works out. None the less. We don't have to deal with that this year. We get to watch everybody else figure things out, but we are going to have to talk about the free agency wheel and what the Pistons can do in a couple of weeks after the draft is over. We're going to get ready to get into the picks. I had a pretty good week last week. Nice little bounce back, hoping to keep that positive momentum going. And maybe you're going to do well this week as well. We'll be back with those picks on 95.3 WBC.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time to get into the picks, and well, let's just say the mojo is back. A couple weeks ago, went 2-4 and did not have all that great of a week. Did not pick the best. And you know, sometimes that happens. But you know what? We bounced back last week and took care of business. We went 4-2 last week. Our only losses were the Liberty to the Mercury and then the Panthers losing the UFL championship to the Defenders, which gets us up to 21-9 through 30 games. So I'm sitting comfortable at well above 500. So it's time to get into a fresh week of picks to see if I can keep that momentum going. Don't forget, you can listen along. Pull out that, your pen, paper, notepad, whatever else. Write down the picks. Select your picks. Put them into the chat feature in the WBCK app and tell me how well you did. And, you know, see if you're able to do better than me. But, I mean, 21-9 is tough to beat. So unless you're, you know, just a few games better than me or undefeated, I don't want to hear too much coming from you. You know what I'm saying? So let's get into the picks for this week, starting with arguably the most important game of the weekend, going down tomorrow, 8 p.m. at the Paycom Center in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, on ABC. The Oklahoma City Thunder are paying host to the Indiana Pacers for Game 7 of the NBA Finals. It all comes down to this. The NBA champion is crowned from this one game. The accumulation of the whole season comes down to this one game. It's been a back-and-forth battle the entire time. There's been blowouts on either side. There's been close victories on either side. There's been questionable calls. There's been great adjustments. There's been injuries. This has been everything we are expecting for the NBA Finals. The only question now is to find out who's going to win the NBA Finals. Who's going to be that team that gets to hold the Larry O'Brien trophy at the end of the game and gets to hang it up in their rafters forever, gets to have a championship ring forever, gets to remember their first championship forever. Will it be the Oklahoma City Thunder or will it be the Indiana Pacers? Will it be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or will it be Tyrese Haliburton? Will it be Jalen Williams or will it be Pascal Siakam? Will it be Obi Toppin or will it be Jalen Williams? Will it be Isaiah Hartenstein or will it be Benedict Mathurin? Will it be Chet Holmgren? We don't know. But I'm going to try and take a guess, right? The game opened up as 8.5-point favorites for OKC. That 9 now sits at 7.5. The money line is a 285 favorite for OKC, a plus 235 underdog for the Pacers. We know who's leading the way for both of these squads. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam, Chet Holmgren. The stars have showed up game in and game out. We just don't know if they're going to do it again. I have to be safe here and make sure I don't get destroyed by the rest of the Detroiters out there. I'm going to go with the Oklahoma City Thunder, although I do think this will be an extremely exciting game and wouldn't be surprised to see either team come out on top. We're going to keep things right on the hardwood, except we're heading over to the W. We're talking the women's game now, kicking things off on Sunday, 3 p.m. The Indiana Fever, who are 6-6, are 2-3 on the road, are taking on the Las Vegas Aces, who are 5-6, they're 3-2 at home. Kelsey Mitchell doing her thing, leading the Ace or the Fever in points at 17.1 per game. Aaliyah Boston is 8.1 rebounds and 3.9 assists to lead the Fever in those categories as they're just now getting Caitlin Clark back, and she's going to continue to impose herself into the squad. Asia Wilson doing her thing on the opposite side, averaging 21 points per game, 9.6 rebounds, and 4 assists per game. Dawana Bonner is expected to be out until this game, so we'll see if she plays. Aja Wilson expected to be back on the 20th, while Gustafsson and Parker Tyus are out July 3rd and August 15th, respectively. The Aces have a 60.6% chance to win this game, while the Fever only a 39.4% chance this game. Although the Fever are scoring more points this game and allowing, or this year, and allowing less points than the Aces, I think it's something to do with the Aces being at home. They're not losing many games at home, but both of these teams are 5-5 in their last 10. The Aces are 1-4 in their last 5. I would assume a lot of that has to do with not having Asia Wilson. I do think she comes back for this game, and I do think that they win yet another home game to improve to 4-2. So I'm taking the Aces over the Fever. Staying right here in the WNBA, We're going to bounce over to another team that's playing on Sunday at 7 p.m. in the Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington at 7 p.m. The New York Liberty on the road, who are 4-1. They're 10-2 on the year, to take on the Seattle Storm at home, who are 4-2 at home, 7-5 on the year. Breonna Stewart has 21 points per game, while Jonquel Jones has 9.6 rebounds per game, and Natasha Cloud, 6.3 assists per game. It's a community effort over with the Liberty, and that explains why they're one of the top teams in the WNBA right now. Skylar Diggins leading the way for the Storm with 17.8 points per game. Nneka Ogwumike, 8.2 rebounds, while Skylar Diggins also has 6.2 assists. Jonquel Jones is a game-time decision for this game for the Liberty. Gabby Williams is a game time decision as well for the Storm. Katie Lou Samuelson is out for the season for the Storm. That's a huge loss as well. I mean, the Liberty putting up almost 90 points a game while only giving up 76. Seattle Storm 82 while giving up just 78. Liberty are 3-2 in their last five. The Storm are 4-1 in their last five. This is a tough game to pick, but I think when it comes down to it, is they're going to need everything they have out on the floor for the Storm to win this game. I think the Liberty are simply just too good right now. They're coming off a couple of losses, but I think that was due to Jonquel Jones being out. I think she returns, and if she returns, they win. And even if they don't, I think I'm going to take them anyway. I got the Liberty over the Seattle Storm on Sunday. Our last game in the WNBA going down on Tuesday the 24th at 10 p.m. on NBA TV in the Climate Pledge Arena. Again, the Storm hosting the Indiana Fever, who are obviously 2-3 at the time, 6-6. We just ran through both of these teams not too long ago, talking about their prospective games that they have on Sunday night. This is going to be an interesting game, and believe it or not, I'm taking the Fever. Caitlin Clark is back, and she's dynamite. There really hasn't been anyone to be the kryptonite to her Superman kind of vibe so far this season, and even last season. She's been unreal coming in the last 2 years. I expect that to continue. And obviously, she's been getting the help from Kelsey Mitchell, Aaliyah Boston, and company. And they don't even have DeJuana Bonner right now. So if Bonner was to return on the 22nd like she's expected, the Fever team will only get better. So I'm going to take them to steal a game over the Storm. I have the Storm going 0-2 at home this weekend. I may be completely wrong, but only time will tell. That's going to wrap things up on the hardwood. So let's get inside of the octagon. Going down at the Baku Crystal Hall in Baku, Azerbaijan on later today. The prelims start in, you know, about 10, 15 minutes. And then the main card starts at 3 p.m. The prelims are on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Main card's on ABC and ESPN Plus. We're going to talk about the light heavyweight main event, the Jamahal Hill taking on Khalil Roundtree Jr. Jamahal Hill 12-3 as this fight is completely even on the cards at 110 apiece. 6'4", 205 pounds, 34 years in age, 79-inch reach, and a southpaw fighter for Hill, while on the opposite side, Roundtree, 6'1", 205 pounds, 35 years old, 76.5-inch reach, and he's also a southpaw fighter. I mean, these guys are two strikers, as Hill, 7.05 significant strikes landed per minute in comparison to 3.73 for Roundtree, 55.4% accuracy for Hill, 41.53%. for Roundtree, and neither one of them really does a lot of takedowns. So I'm expecting this to be similar to a kickboxing match. Lots of standing up in this. Is going to come down to who has a stronger chin. Both of these Americans are simply going to be a great match for each other. I think I'm going to have to go with, just less losses here. 12-3 to 14-6. This is an interesting fight here. I think that they're two fighters that are matched up in great capacity with each other, but I think I'm just going to go with Hill because it sounds right. So Hill's the one that I'm going to take. That's going to get us into our last pick of the weekend. It is, you know it, a baseball series. Our Detroit Tigers, who are 26-12 at home, 48-28 on the year, are welcoming in the Oakland Athletics 31-46 on the year, 17-21 on the road to Comerica Park. The first game going down on Tuesday, 6:40 first pitch. We got Luis Severino taking on Tarik Skubal. Severino is 2-7 with a 4.42 ERA, a 1.34 whip in 95.2 innings pitched. He's got 98 hits, given up 98 hits with just 66 strikeouts, 30 walks, and 7 homers. On the opposite side of him, it's Skubal, 8-2 on the year, 2.06 ERA, 0.85 whip in 96 innings pitched. He has given up 70 hits, 117 strikeouts, just 12 walks, and 6 homers. That's just game one, which they're giving the Tigers a 77.9% chance to win. Game two, Lopez is on the mound for the A's. He's 1-4 with a 4.25 ERA, 1.44 whip in 36 innings pitched. He's given up 36 hits, 49 strikeouts, 16 walks, and 6 homers. The Tigers are undecided, but they still have a 74.3% chance to win this game as well. Jeffrey Springs will be on the mound for the A's in game three, which has a 1-10 first pitch on Thursday. 5-5 for Springs, a 4.52 ERA, 1.29 whip, 79.2 innings pitch. He has given up 72 hits, 66 strikeouts, 31 walks, and just 12 home runs. Flaherty's on the opposite side. He's 5-7 with a 4.03 ERA, 1.13 whip, and 76 innings pitched. He's only given up 58 hits, struck out 90, walked 28, and has given up 14 home runs. The Tigers have a 66.8% chance to win this game, and that Wednesday has a first pitch game, or that Wednesday game is a first pitch of 6:40. And you know, I'm taking the Tigers. So that gives me the Thunder, the Aces, Hill, Liberty, Fever, and the Tigers. I hope you have an amazing weekend because I'm going to as well. We'll be back next week with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.